This is a Pinball News production.
Thank you, and it is really great to be here in England. This is my first time out of America, and I'm just loving this whole trip. I want to thank Gary for letting me stay at his house for the last week and taking me all around London. I've seen all the historic sites, and it's been very inspirational. And I want to thank Andy Highway for inviting me to the UK Pinball Party. I've met a lot of really nice people, signed a lot of autographs, and I'm enjoying every minute of it. So let's get started. I'm wearing my Stern shirt today because I don't work for Stern anymore, but this is the nicest quality shirt I own. So do you all understand American? Okay. Because I've only understood about half of everything I've heard today. Especially you Welshmen back there.
We don't understand the English.
Okay, so when I started, I went back to college when I was 30 and I majored in product design. And when I was a senior, I thought it'd really be nice to design a futuristic pinball cabinet. These are just some of my beginning sketches. After I designed the cabinet and finished the project, I had to have back surgery. I couldn't take my courses again for another year, so I built a full-size version of the cabinet, and that's how I got my start at Bally in Chicago. So some of my ideas were, this was around 78 or 79, and I wanted, so all the scoring were still like scattered all over the back glass, and I wanted to centralize the scoring in one area so the players could sort of reference their scoring to watch their scores go up. At that time, all the speakers were in the base of the cabinet pointing down, and my idea was to put the speakers in this area here so the sound would go towards the players. I noticed when I was doing my research, that was me going to arcades playing pinball, that was research, the kids had the skills to do the flippers, but they could barely see the play field, so my idea was to do something to raise the area of the flippers but lower the play field a little bit so kids could see it. You can go to the next. So this is a little further development sketch. I put it on a pedestal just because it looks cool. And so the speakers would have been here, the score displays would have been here, all the hardware, the circuit boards would have been in here. This cabinet was designed to be made out of fiberglass. So then after this, I built a model of it. Next. And this model has been stored in my basement for years, so it's had a little damage. But after I got to Williams, when I presented the model in school, it just had, I had some kind of graphics up here and here, but there was nothing on the play field. So I added Demolition Man graphics just to make it look a little more interesting as a model. Next. There's the side view and the back view. And this is the full size one that I built. I took it to Schaefer Distributing in Columbus, Ohio, set it up next to some other pinball games. The only thing that I probably would have changed later, and all the artists would have encouraged me to change, was make the back box taller to get more interesting artwork in the back. So then I got in my old van and I hauled this off to Chicago and showed it to the people at Bally, and they hired me. Next. So this, I used to have a hell of a lot more hair. So this was the first cabinet that actually got designed. Of course, they didn't want to build one in fiberglass. It's too expensive. Nobody wants to deal with the mess. And this eventually became the rapid fire cabinet. Okay, Party Animal. My first game was Special Force, but I don't have any pictures or any reference for that, and I got a lot of slides here, so I had to eliminate some stuff. So my second game I ever designed was Party Animal, and that was the hardest game I ever designed, because you use up all your good ideas on your first game, and then you got to do it all over again, and for me it was very difficult. Okay, here. Now here's the development of the artwork. Some of these pictures were getting cut off, but this is Pat McMahon's original sketch. And I guess this guy is a wolf. But you can see the slight changes. He changed his character here and that. But that's how the development process works. With play fields and with the artwork. There's, it's always a process of development and change.
Okay.
And I had the idea, I thought it would be interesting to allow the players to select their own background music, so that's where the idea for the jukebox came from. Unfortunately, our sound system at that time was so terrible, everything sounded alike to me. Okay, Gary. And then, so my original frog was on, I put that on top of a, I always like to try to get free motion, something I didn't have to pay for with a coil or a motor or something. So I put this frog on top of a ballet mushroom bumper. And so when you hit the mushroom bumper, the frog would leap. And this was, later became the frogs on Scared Stiff, which were even more developed. Blackwater 100, when I was younger and crazier, I used to do a lot of motocross racing and enduros and hare scrambles. Blackwater 100 was a race that was popular in the 70s in America. It was known as America's toughest race, and it was nasty. It was through swamps and rivers and muck and rocks and mountains. So I thought it would be fun to design a pinball game based on that theme. So that's how Blackwater came about. Next. This is the start of the race. I only have a few photographs, but the spectators would get in a creek and pile rocks up and dam up the creek to make it even higher and harder to get through. And this is another one of the creek crossings. And they were tough because there was huge rocks that you couldn't see that would be buried in. You'd think you're getting partway across, and then you hit a giant rock and you fall over and you got to push your bike across, turn it upside down, pump the water out of it. Okay, and that, unfortunately, is the way I used to look. And that's my little daughter. She's 40 years old now, and she teaches school, so she's a lot smarter than her old man. And so that was before the start of the race. Out of all my friends that went to the race, we went for like 4 different years. We didn't actually race in the race, we rode in the race, because you had to be really great to finish that race. But out of all of us that went, the only one that ever came home with the trophy was Mary Lou Dawson, one of the guy's wives. And that's her. And so then I got invited, after we did the game, I got invited to participate in the race again, and they had a Blackwater 100 inside their visitor information center in Davis, West Virginia. And so that's my friend Doug playing the game, and that's my little brother Larry. So they had the game on display inside their information center, and it got a lot of, it was pretty popular at the race. Did you skip? Did we miss one?
Yep.
All right, the next one is just a picture of the play field. This play field was actually inspired by Dan Langlois, who was the first one to do a very deep play field like that with his Lost World pinball game. I thought that was a really great idea, so I used that again on Blackwater, but then I added this play area down at the bottom because I figured that space is always wasted, so I wondered if I could do something with it and make that more play area. And it worked out on Blackwater. We made the cover a replay. So you probably know a lot of these people. That's Jim Padlin, Steve Blatspieler, Joe Dillon, Gary Oglesby was the programmer, Neil Falconer was the sound designer, and Tony Ramone was the artist. And in those days, we had a lot of money to spend on our trade show displays. And Suzuki donated an ATV, and we had a drawing and gave away an ATV at that trade show. And this is Dave Coombs. He was the promoter of the race. This is Mark Hyde, who actually won the race 4 times in a row. That's an incredible accomplishment to win that race. And I still have one of these Valley Blackwater jerseys. I don't know what happened to all the rest of them. And that's Mark. He signed a lot of autographs at the trade show, so there's a lot of Blackwater flyers out there somewhere with Mark Hyde's autograph. And this is at the trade show, we're wearing our jerseys. That's my wife, Barbara, and that's John Papadoop. John Papadoop, when I first came to Valley, they put me in office with this 18-year-old kid, and it was John Papadoop. And then at that trade show, all all the Williams guys came over to play the game, and that was pretty exciting for me. So from the back, you can see Joe Kamenkow. That's Steve Ritchie, Claude Fernandez. That's Larry DeMar right there. And there's one more picture. Ed Boon of Mortal Kombat fame. Larry DeMar. Pat Lawler, Steve, and Claude. Okay, here. At the Dr. Dude show was the Simpsons game, and Matt Groening came over and played Dr. Dude, and he signed my Dr. Dude flyer for me. And this is one of my first Whitewoods for Dr. Dude. This is usually how I start with the game, just trying to get my main elements in the game first, and then I kind of work everything in around it. So I knew I wanted this big Mixmaster machine, so that's what I put in first, and I built a little model of it. And I think this is where I invented these jumper bumper caps. And these were models that were made. Okay, here. And this is further development of the Whitewood. So nobody's seen these pictures before, and I only have a few. I wish I had taken a lot more pictures when I was at work, but how many of us take pictures where we work? So I wish I had taken more. So here's a little comparison of the finished Whitewood and how it started over there. And that's me and Greg. Greg, of course, was the artist. And he's the one that actually came up with the Dr. Dude theme. Originally, I wanted to call it something like Dr. Doom, and the idea you had to your job would have been to destroy this Dr. Doom machine. But there was already a Dr. Doom comic book, and Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure, the movie, was popular at this time. So that's why Greg came up with the Dr. Doom theme.
We do have our own dude in the room.
Who's the dude? Okay, Demolition Man.
Send a maniac to catch a man.
I enjoyed doing this game because I tried to make it as much like the movie as I could and make it like a battle and a war, because there's so many weapons and guns in the game. That's why I came up with these gun handles to sort of try to make the player feel like he was like controlling weapons too. Okay, Gary.
Can you say a little about the alternate sound tapes for that day?
I wasn't at the recording sessions, but I heard the raw tapes, and it was like, I don't really know what's in it. I think Stallone swore some, but Wesley Snipes was like, he was really bored with the whole thing, and he did a lot of swearing. So we went to the show where Steve's Star Trek game was presented, and they had this Klingon character who was trying to kill me. And then the next picture is a Borg character. Well, I found out that, and this was when I was working on Demolition Man, so I found out her name was Tracy Coco, and she appeared every week on the Star Trek The Next Generation series. She was always in the background pretending like she was moving some controls and stuff. But she also had a walk-on part in the very beginning of the Demolition Man movie. And so after we talked to her for a while, we got her to be in our sales video. I don't know if any of you have seen the Demolition Man sales video, but that's how we got her, because she was actually in the movie. And then this was my first control handle that I designed. I carved it out of styrofoam insulation, and then we had two models made just so I could see if it felt good and felt right. And then I built a set that kind of looked like some kind of cryo prism for us to use in the sales video. So I built all of this junk here. This is actually an old terrarium. This, in America, it's called a sump pump well. It goes in your basement in the ground. And then we had a fog machine. We were pretty proud of it because we used it a lot in that movie. And that's Tracy and her Demolition Man getup. And this was about 2 o'clock in the morning after like 3 or 4 days of shooting the sales video. She was happy it was finally finished, and here we are at the trade show. And then so we had her at the trade show, and this guy is a contractor in Chicago, and he made a living as a Sylvester Stallone lookalike. You know who that is. This is interesting how I discovered this drawing again, because of course the companies keep all of our drawings. This was hand drawn on vellum. And I can't believe we used to do this stuff and draw every little, it's kind of a rough picture, but drew every little thing by hand. This spring, all of Steve Kordak's memorabilia was at WMS Industries gaming division, and they still had all of his pinball memorabilia. Well, Larry DeMar and Duncan Brown and I, Larry's going to take control of all of that stuff, and Duncan Brown and I went over to WMS with our pickup trucks and carried all of this stuff back to Duncan's, and for some reason, three or four of my drawings weren't archived with the other drawings. They were just separate in Steve's office, so it was pretty cool to see my old... This was my very first pinball game. This was my... No, this is Elvira, isn't it? Never mind. This is... But it was cool to see my old Elvira drawing again. This is me motivating the design team. That's Tony Pugh. He was the mechanical designer, and that's Mark Panaccio. He was the programmer. Okay. And that's Tony's reaction to my motivation. This is Greg. Greg working on the artwork, but you can see he's got the paintbrush stuck up his nose there, because he was working late hours trying to get that done. But that's the actual painting on his table right there. It's not finished yet. And I was sitting in Greg's office flipping through a comic book, and I found this picture of this skull, and that's where I got the idea for the Skull Mountain on Elvira and the Party Monsters. And then there's the actual skull that we had sculpted. Oh, and I wanted to put red eyes in it, but they wouldn't. Our sales guys wouldn't let me put red eyes in it because they said they could never sell a game in the South because those red eyes meant the devil, and they would never be able to sell that in the South. And this is me after I had a serious dirt bike accident when I went riding with Steve Ritchie and Steve and Mark Ritchie. I hadn't ridden for years. When we went to Williams, I found out that those guys were into dirt bikes too, so I was really excited. They took me out to this place I'd never been. I thought I'd try to impress Mark. I was the last guy to pop out of the woods onto a nice little Jeep trail. So I gassed it up to about 60 miles an hour and blew past Mark, but I wasn't watching the road, and the road made a 90-degree turn to the right, and I didn't. Every time you start showing off on a motorcycle is when you get hurt. So I broke my left femur, three ribs, my collarbone, and a bone in my hand. And this is a picture Greg took that used me as a model for the Wolfman on the back glass of Party Animal. And every day I came to work like this, I could drive my truck, but I had to hobble into the receptionist, have somebody come down and get me and get my wheelchair out of my van. I had to wheel around to the service elevator, which had those heavy doors. And I'd go up to the second floor every day on the service elevator. I had that on for like 6 months. Okay. And so that's how the art came out. I've been immortalized in several of my games. Okay, yeah. So as a result of my accident and all my broken bones, then part of the stuff on the grill is what Greg called me Nerdman. Nerdman's broken ribs. And then this is that. Oh, and at the end of this presentation, if I don't take too long, I have some rare videos of this event, of Elvira at the trade show, and also of a special promo that we had Elvira make to help sell the idea of doing Scared Stiff. So this was at that press event right before the trade show. And that's me with my leg and Elvira. Oh, I'm glad this part. This is Eddie Adlam from Playmeter magazine. That's a great picture. And so this is where we start going into the trade show. We walked past everybody else's booth, and when we got to our booth, we were just stunned because there was a double line of people all the way around the whole booth waiting in line to get Elvira's autograph. I don't know if you know, did you ever hear the American music group, The Tokens? They did the song, The Lion Sleeps Tonight. That's these guys right here. They used this event as a little promo for them and Elvira. They had their picture taken with Elvira. Okay, here. Just another shot of her signing on. She signed autographs for like 2 hours. She was so friendly and so easy to work with. And then, so that night, we never expected this, but we won best new equipment of the whole trade show. We were just stunned, and our whole design team was so excited. Greg was so excited, he made this sign, but he spelled equipment wrong. Best new equipment. Pirates of the Caribbean. Okay, here. This is one of Kevin's original sketches, and it has, you can't see all this stuff, but it has a lot of Disney notes on it of changes they wanted to make. We had this scene from the attraction at Disney World. They wouldn't let us use anything from Disney World, anything from the attraction, so they wanted that taken out. I had a picture of the Kraven's mouth. They didn't want to show that. They didn't want to give that away for the movie. They wanted this replaced with a compass, and just a lot of little things. Okay. And this, this was my beginning of my design for Pirates of the Caribbean. I already had this idea I wanted to do up here. I don't know if you know it, but this is actually at 3.5 degrees. My idea was I wanted it to act like old electromechanical games so that you could nudge it and push it and try to get it to go in the saucer or the holes. At first I wanted it wood, but I guess it became too expensive when we made the whole thing out of plastic. Originally, I was going to have 3 spinning discs in the back. And in this one, the ship was going to be here, and I believe it looks like I had the treasure chest in front of the ship. But this is how things start. I just start playing around and trying to see what fits where. I knew I wanted a sinking ship. Okay, here. And then Disney sent us a lot of pictures, so one of them was a picture of the... No, the other one. Davy Jones' ship.
The
Flying Dutchman. So I cut it out, and I put it on foam core, which Steve Ritchie calls Nordmanite, because I use it to do a lot of stuff with. And I cut out the sails, so... This is how I showed my engineer what I wanted to do. Go to the next picture here. And so now you can see the first sail fell. The next picture, the second sail would fall. And then the ship would tip up like that. So from that, John Rothermel was the engineer who did that mechanism. And he's the one that made it all work. And this was my original concept for the treasure chest. Again, I wanted something three-dimensional. So There would be 3 stand-up targets in front of here. You'd have to hit the 3 targets. If you did, this would rotate. And then you'd see a picture of a shovel digging in the sand. You hit the targets again. And then you would begin exposing the treasure chest. Hit the targets again. And you see the real chest. And you hit them one more time, and the chest would open up. But that became too expensive to build, too. And this is just a picture of the chest that Disney actually used in the movie. It was pretty cool looking. And then this is the picture that Disney's, a sketch that they sent us of the Kraken. So I Xeroxed a lot of copies of this and cut them out and built my first model of the Kraken, which sits behind the ship.
That was the one you said you weren't allowed to shove.
Right, yeah, on the back glass. And... So this looks pretty much like the Kraken on the game. I really wanted to have a sculpted Kraken that was three-dimensional with moving tentacles, but that all became too expensive and I couldn't do that either. So it's just flat plastic now. And this is, if any of you have taken the Stern tour, you don't get to see this room. This is our room where we build up our Whitewoods and our games, and these are 2 Pirates games on here. And this is something that didn't make it into the Pirates game. This was my parlay feature. If you get a ball that drained out the outwing, these targets spelled parlay, and there was a jet bumper here. So randomly, you might be able to spell parlay. If you spelled parlay, you would have got an extra ball. And that was taken out for its cost reasons too. So here's, this is pretty much how the final game looked. This is just building another white wood. And then the white wood's further along here. I like to use ramps that don't look like they enclose the ball like a tunnel. I like to have things open. If you've seen my Party Zone game, the ramp is real wild and open. And I was doing it on here, but the ball kept flying off, so we added these metal braces just for the white wood, but we eventually got it right in production. And this is the first sculpt of the ship. We still had cardboard sails on it. They weren't molded yet. And then this is the final white wood. And this was in Dwight's office, and this is, of course, he started doing software way before this, but this was our final game. I wanted to have Jack the Monkey. The ball comes around the Jack the Monkey shot, and I wanted to have Jack on top, that he would flip up almost like the frogs, but that became too expensive to do. And the other thing was, we didn't know if we could use Jack the Monkey because he was a separate contract, and Disney wanted us to pay for Jack the Monkey too. So, but they finally relented and let us use him. That's Dwight, he's the programmer in the game. That's Dwight's office. It looks like most programmers' offices. And then this is the artwork that Kevin was working on, and this is an idea of how it developed. There's just little subtle changes between here and here. But if you look at this one, Disney told us we wanted to put hidden Mickeys in, because in all the Disney parks, they have hidden Mickeys all over the parks, and they told us, no, you can't put any hidden Mickeys in. So in this one, there is no hidden Mickey. But in this one, we snuck one in, and there is one on the Pirates game. And should I tell them where it is, or make everybody
find it?
There's
one they can find.
Okay.
It has to do with... If they can't find it, they can come and get
it. Okay, Gary. Then this is just a shot of the final playfield. A lot of the playfields, our screener has trouble with colors and inks, and these points are supposed to be gray. They come out green, but they have to go on the production line anyway because we can't stop the line and wait a week for more playfields to come in. Then this is just an example of how the sails are molded. This is just a backing form. This is how they come out of the mold, and then they're trimmed. Then my game's scared stiff. When I wanted to start Scared Stiff, there was a hot rod show in Chicago, and Elvira was making an appearance. So I went there and I talked to her, and that's when I found out she would be very interested in doing another pinball game. And also at the show was one of my custom car heroes, Ed Big Daddy Roth. I don't know if you know his name, but he was very popular in the 60s in America for making wild custom cars. He's passed away since, but I like having that picture of me with him. He created the Rat Fink. I don't know if you've ever seen the Rat Fink character. Probably just an American thing. This was one of our first attempts at the back glass for Scared Stiff. We didn't know what we were going to call it. In this case, we just called it Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. Greg and I had a real difficult time coming up with a name for this game. I don't know why it was so hard, but we were calling it Elvira and the Haunted House, and Elvira and this, and Elvira and that, and we never did get anything that we liked. So one day we went in to talk to Mike Boone, the programmer, and told him this idea we had, and we thought it was great, and he just made a face, and he said, I don't like that name. So Greg and I walked back into my office all glum and sad and wondering what we're going to do, and then Greg just said, Scared Stiff. And that was like, we knew that was the perfect name then. Okay. And this was a color. What this was going to be was you were going to accomplish things on the play field and light up all these elements on the stairs. And then we came up with the moving spider idea. And this is just part of the development of that. This is actually, this cat has passed away, but this is my wife's cat, Chelsea. She wasn't really black, but I gave Greg a picture of her, and he put that in. And I think that this is the start of my Scared Stiff game. I was just starting to lay things out because I was using a ramp from the Party Monsters. There's some kind of monster head sitting here. It was just the very beginnings. And that's just a shot of the same thing with from overhead. I had made a trip to Disney World, and at Pirates of the Caribbean, I found this pile of skulls that's made out of plaster, so I thought, well, that might be cool in my Scared Stiff game. So I bought the pile of skulls, I drilled out the eyes and put LEDs in, and so that worked out, except for in production, you know, they left the LEDs out. But this is the original sculpture, and it's done, I think, about 30% larger, because it shrinks when it's molded. So here's the large sculpture, and then here's the real molded piece that is getting cut off. And then that's how it would have looked in the game with all the LED eyes. This was one of the sculptures for the monster's head. The sculptor changed it, I don't know why, but probably because he didn't like those chicken feet that were on top of his head. And then this is a clay model of the real skull and ribs. And then, so when we wanted to see how it looked, the molder just uses whatever plastic he has to give us the test shots so we can see what it looks like. So I've got a green one and a clear one and a white one. And then that's the final one. And that is Cassandra Peterson, who is Elvira.
Where's that taken?
That was in my office. I had the Demolition Man things that I made and I stuck them in my office. And that's her doing the speech for the game. She had a good time doing it. Like I said, she was very easy and fun to work with. And she enjoyed all the risque comments that we had her make. Or say. And this is part of the design team, me and Greg and Mark Wayna and Cassandra. Off to the right, you can't see, is Mike Boone, the programmer. Then I got laid off before this trade show. I thought that kind of sucked because I worked real hard doing that game and I didn't go to the trade show to see how everything was received, but Elvira enjoyed playing it. Whitewater. Well, this doesn't show, but what I'm trying to show you is an example of even how the brochures progress. In the beginning, they had, you can't see the whole thing, but in the beginning, they had the Bigfoot character on the flyer. Then this is a comp of the back of the flyer. And this was a lot of people asking how this came about. We didn't even plan this. A guy came in with this system. He just came in and made a cold call with this system of this soil process. And Greg and I saw it and we loved it. And so that's how the waterfall started on the topper. And this is Ed Boone, the programmer, Greg, the artist. That's Chris Graner, the sound guy, and Scott Slomiani, who did the dot matrix displays for Whitewater. And this is how I started to design Whitewater, because in my head, I knew I had all these ramps and levels and things I wanted to do, but it was very hard for me to try to draw it on two-dimensional paper. So I built it out of cardboard and foam core first. And I didn't even remember, Jim Shelberg has this model now, and I'll show you the picture of the playfield next so you can see how it changed a little bit from this. But I didn't even remember this till I saw Jim's model that I had something similar to Blackwater on the bottom. And again, we took that out because of expense.
Why aren't there more white waters? Why did William stop making white waters? I mean, it was selling well.
It was selling well, but Twilight Zone was coming out, and so they took Whitewater off the line so they could start making Twilight Zones. And then this is the real play field. You can see I moved the funnel over a little bit. I don't remember why, but so. But it was close to my first cardboard model.
One of the questions we received for you, Dennis, was the who was the Yeti based on?
I think if you'll go to the next picture, we'll find that out. That's me with another cool haircut, and I'm embarrassed at how much I look like Bigfoot. But John Yowsey came over to my house and took a lot of pictures of me to base his Bigfoot character on. So these are the pictures he took, and then these are his actual sketches for the sculptor for Bigfoot. So the Bigfoot character in Whitewater is me. And I do have big feet, too. And then this is John's artwork for the back glass. This is John Yowsey, and this is his son, I think. I don't know who this is. But in the background here, you'll see an old Dodge panel truck, and I still, that's my truck, and I said, John, let's put this in the artwork, too. So I still have that truck, and I'm still working on building it, and I don't know if I'll ever get it finished. And then this, I was looking for a picture of Whitewater next to Getaway, but I couldn't find a good one because this redhead got in the way. But I found this on the internet. Okay, this is what I was working on for Transformers. And Gary had me work on Transformers for like 3 months, I think, saying, don't worry, we'll get the license, we'll get the license, I'll get the license. And he couldn't get the license, so I wasted like 3 or 4 months working on this game. But one of the main... Oh, and I designed the bottom like the Wheel of Fortune bottom just because I like to try to do things different. I can't do the same thing all the time. And I liked the different bottom. I thought it was fun to play. But Gary just blew his stack. He said, we'll never do another bottom like that. Every game will have three bumpers. Every game will have a plunger. Every game will have a standard Italian bottom. So I said, okay, Gary, I'll change it. So one of the main features of the game would have been the all-spark. I forget what was happening here. Maybe the ball would go up and hit it and bounce off. But over here, there would be a shot into this. This was a disc-shaped permanent magnet. The ball would shoot into the permanent magnet. It would have been styled like a robot arm. He would have put the magnet up to the all-spark, and the all-spark would have sucked the ball inside the all-spark. And I wanted to have little... LED lights and fiber optics in here, just like the one in the movie. Okay, and then this gun was inspired by the robot's arms because they had all these cool guns. This would have been the multi-ball feature. There would have been a ramp to load it from the top. I made this out of all different kinds of plastic plumbing parts. It would have been loaded from the top and then fired the ball back at the player. Another view of the gun. It would have been, okay, now it would have been blue in here with blue LEDs in a circle and would have fired three balls at you very fast, kind of similar to Indy 500. Okay. And this is what I was working on for Buck Hunter. This is a wheel. You can see a two-dimensional version of the wheel back here. The wheel would turn, a new animal would be exposed, and there was... So this is my three-dimensional version of it. Bushes would have hid the animals coming up and going down. I found these toys made in Germany. But I had stand-up targets in the front. You wouldn't hit the actual animal. You would hit the stand-up target. So this target would... Do any of you know the game Buck Hunter, the video game? Have any of you played it? So what I found was interesting about that game was that you could always increase your skill. You always tried to go for a headshot. I mean, you could always kill a deer, but you wanted to finish the game with just one shot. So that's what you could have done in this game. This would have been the headshot, the body shot, and the rump shot. And then there was a miss and a doe shot over here. So if you hit the headshot, you would have killed the animal right away, and he would have rotated, and the next animal would have come up. When you hit it, the animal would have fallen backwards and then rotated into the play field. Then, earlier this spring, we had a get-together with Steve Kordak. I think he's 99 years old now, and so all the old Williams employees had lunch with Steve. That was a nice moment.
Here he comes. Who are the guys in the photo?
Oh, that's Lyman Sheets, and that's Keith Johnson. And then just to show you some other stuff that I don't just build pinball games, we had this deck built a couple years ago. My ground slopes towards my house, so they had to dig it out. And my wife was really upset because I let it look like that for 2 years. So this spring I said, okay, I'll take care of it. So I got 3 tons of boulders, and I was going to build a stone wall along here and then a bridge to go across the dry stream bed next. So with those 3 tons of boulders, I thought, well, that's not too bad. In a couple of weeks, I can make a wall. What I didn't realize was I never built a stone wall before, and those 3 tons of boulders became like lifting 10 tons of boulders because I had to lift each rock 5 or 6 times to find out which one would fit in the right place. So there's the almost finished wall, and then my bridge that I built to finish it. So she's happier now. It looks a little better than the ditch. Okay, here. And then the other thing I'm doing is building custom dollhouses. This was my first one that I built. It was a very cheap kit, but I added all the stonework on the outside. It's made of a material called paper clay. It's an air dry clay, so I sculpted each stone, glued it on. I made all the shingles by hand, glued on each one by hand, painted every stone. Okay. This is a side view. I also made leaded glass windows to fit into it. This is 1/12 scale, so it's about this wide and about this tall. And this is just a view of the inside with my stucco walls. This one's all finished. I have several others that aren't finished here. This is a real house that exists in Beverly Hills, California. It's known as the Witch's House, and I thought, that's about the coolest house I've ever seen. So I collected all the pictures of it that I could off the internet, and then I drew my own plans and I started building my own version. And this is, it's not finished yet, but I've got the stucco all done, and I still have to do the shingles and things on the roof and finish the windows. And then this is the inside. I made my own fireplace. It's kind of a wild wizard looking fireplace. Then this is another one that I'm currently working on called Wizards R Us. It's a wizard store. And this one's about 2.5 feet tall. It's not finished yet. I still have to do the shingles, and the stucco up here is finished, and I still have to do the windows. But these I would expect to sell for somewhere around $2,000 to $3,000. At least that's the guy that I learned from what he sells his for, but he's got a name. I bought the wizard off of eBay and painted him to look like stone. This is another view. The chimney is real twisty and curvy. It's kind of Tudor style. That's another reason I was excited to come to England, to see some Tudor style buildings. And then this is the inside chimney, kind of a fantasy looking chimney. Again, this is made out of styrofoam building insulation as a base and then paper clay covering it. So each brick and stone is carved by hand. This is the project that Greg Ferris and I are working on now. It's called Lone Alley Big Juicy Melons. We both like old fruit crate art. This is an example of this is real fruit crate art on the front, on the side panel here. But so they were pretty risque back in the 40s and 50s because that's called Best Point whole stem tomatoes. This is Ken Walker. He's a member of Team EM in America. It's a loosely knit group of EM fixtures live around the States. And this is the new cabinet I've designed. It's not on legs. It's designed to look like an old fruit crate. Old fruit crates stacked up. Okay, here. This is Greg's artwork. So it's kind of a combination of old fruit crate art and pinup art. Then we showed what we had at the Milwaukee show a few months ago. So we've made some progress. I've since added some rubber vibration mounts between the main cabinet and the base cabinet, and it moves really nice now, even more than one with one leg, so it'll be interesting to see how that plays. We're almost ready to play it. And this is Roger Sharp playing it at the Milwaukee show. And then, so what we plan to do is, the back glass is going to be screened like the old 50s back glasses. So we're going to produce about 200 or 250 glasses and sell them as an accessory so you can buy it and put it in your game room. I'm going to build a custom frame so that it looks like a piece of old fruit crate. And then I'll also build one with a light box behind it. Okay, that's it. Oh, we have, if there's time, we have some special videos to show. Like I mentioned them. You want to see them? All right, then I'll just shut up and we'll show the videos. Okay, well, this first one is, yeah, we need sound. This is actually the first flip of the World Rally game. And you can, I don't know why it's sideways, but you can see how this was an original game called Continental Cafe from 1957. And I rearranged everything on the playfield. I added a skill shot to the top up here. I added a skill shot to the plunger shot, which was down through here. I moved the bumpers closer together. They were spread right across the playfield, so I moved them closer together so we get some more action. It has this, and I added more star rollovers. So it has the same rules as Continental Cafe, but we've just enhanced it a bit. Video taken by Greg Ferris when he was actually at the trade show, and he asked that please nobody take any pictures of this because this is his own personal video. Thank you.
I know what you're doing now, but what are you doing tonight?
This is a video that Cassandra made for us when Greg and I presented the idea of doing Scared Stiff, and management wasn't that thrilled about doing it. So we had Elvira. Greg wrote the script for this, and her husband at the time, who was her manager, filmed this.
I'm so glad you could attend my gig. I'm ready. We have some new faces in the crowd. Rachel and Mark. must really get behind me on this one, gang. Whoa, wait a minute. I meant the pinball machine. This time we're going to give the distributors exactly what they've been waiting for. Yes. See y'all in Orlando. Oh, and Joe, stop drooling and pay attention, would you? We're about to have some real fun. I'll give you my room number when we get there. Until then, unpleasant dreams.
Okay, that's the end of my presentation. Thanks for hanging around for the whole thing.
We've got time for a couple of questions.
Yeah.
Anyone got any questions for Dennis? Okay, that's it. We're done.
Okay, good.
Frank.
Yes. Maybe everyone knows the answer, but I would like to know, I'm not obsessed by sex, but I would like to know
on the back glass,
the deeds of the FMS deeds, have they been censored or not? Do you have the answer to that question? Because I think that the back glass,
you're asking
sometimes
about the
it's big and sometimes it's not big. Do you think that the backglass in some countries have been censored or not?
You mean with different artwork?
Yes.
The shape of her breasts?
Yes.
No.
No.
No. We did add what we call a modesty panel, a little lacy panel that would fit in between the dress. Yeah.
Okay.
But she's the same size in every country.
Not like fish tanks,
right.
Actual size?
Okay.
Is there any goldmanite involved in cleavage?
No, that's all natural.
Then is there any heads found to make it?
I'm sorry?
Is there any of the heads found to make it?
I still didn't understand you Welshman.
Were there any heads that failed to make it into Scared Stiff?
Any what?
You know, there's a sequence where you scored when you collect the dead heads.
Oh, any heads that didn't make it.
Right.
I don't remember. I don't think so. We got away with quite a bit with the heads that we put in it.
Dennis, with the ground officer Williams, the boss is aware of the what's in the blue moon night of the bony breast quote.
Gary, translate. I didn't understand what y'all said.
Can you say it one more time? In English, please.
On Scared Stiff, there's a random quote, Knight of the Bony Breast, not Beast.
Right.
What did you think the Williams knew about that?
Right.
That's a good question, and I don't know the answer to that. Even the grown-ups at Stern let us get away with a lot of stuff. They just would shake their heads and walk away.
Any last questions?
Paul? We've heard Gary Stern talk about the future of the industry and how it needs to stay commercial and so keeping luck as a big element. Taking that aside, how would you as an engineer, as a designer, move the game forward? What sort of innovations if the commercial? A lot of things you said were taking out the cost elements. That notwithstanding, what would you see as the future of the game? What would you like to bring into it?
The way I see it, it depends on who you're designing for, because there's two different groups. There's the guys like you that are really skilled players that need a lot of deep rules and fast games. But I think if you want to get new players, I don't know if that's possible, because there's no locations anymore, it doesn't seem. But I would think pinball would, if you want to get new players, pinball would have to go back to its roots with more chance elements. And that's what Gary's attempting now. I don't know if that's going to work or not, but I think if you want to get new people, these new games, these current games, games like you see here that you've played, are just so intense and complicated for the average guy.
Building on Paul's question, Dennis, what element do you most regret looking back over your career not being allowed to put into a table?
Well, the only one I can remember is Pirates, and so I would say that parlay feature in Pirates. And I really wanted to do Transformers too. That would have been cool. And I wanted to. Memory's starting to work. I'm a little drunk because everybody keeps buying me beer. I drink Guinness, by the way. I really would have liked to have seen my version of Buck Hunter come out. I think that would have been cool because it required more skill to hit the animal.
Any more questions?
What theme would you like to do if I gave you £1 million?
I'll do any theme you want. I'll do dining room table for £1 million.
Would you want to do a collaboration with someone like, say, Pat Lawler or Steve Ritchie with that table?
Yeah, I would collaborate with any designers. It's just... for little guys like us, Steve, and that means Steve, and guys with no money and no capital, it's hard to design a brand new pinball game. Pat is actually helping Greg and I a little bit because Pat has a CNC router, so he has routed the Big Juicy Melons playfield for us.
Maybe the last question will be mine, but difficult question. As you know, that Steve Ritchie was there last year in UK Pinball Show, and he had white wood, some screens of Avatar design. Maybe you can have a joker of reply or not. Do you know why the design of Steve Ritchie was refused by Stern for the Avatar?
I don't think it was refused. I think when we all got laid off and Steve's contract was ended, that Gary didn't want to do Steve's game then.
Okay. Thank you. Dennis, I've got two questions for you, please. Out of all the tables you've designed, which is your favourite table, and secondly...
I get that question all the time. I hate that question.
And the second question, actually, is have you got an idea for the pinball in your mind that either was never commercially an option, one that you would love to, you know, a theme that you would have loved to have made yourself, no matter if money was no object?
Mm-hmm. One of my favorite games is Whitewater. Another of my other two favorite games are both my Elvira games, just because they were so much fun to do. And Pirates was one of my real favorites, only because I never thought I'd ever design a pinball game again after Scared Stiff, so I was real happy to have the opportunity to do Pirates. And as far as ideas, yeah, I have one or 200. And so that's what Greg and I are working on. We hope that we can progress from doing the simple electromechanical games to getting into doing some solid-state games. And we won't do a license. They'll all be original themes, whatever we do.
Excellent. Thank you.
Dennis, there was a question someone sent in about the sounds on part of the animal, and they wondered if someone had a stomach disorder.
That was a funny question. Somebody sent in a question about they wondered if my sound guy had a stomach disorder, because I'm so proud of this. Party Animal was the first game to have a belch in it.
Okay, I think we've got time for maybe one or two more questions.
Dennis, can you tell us a bit more about Big Juicy Melon?
What would you like to know?
When's the game going on sale? Are you selling it?
We're building three games because, like I said, it's based on an electromechanical game. So I happened to, when Greg and I started this venture, I happened to have a Gottlieb Continental Cafe in my garage with a broken back glass. And it was a beautiful back glass, and when it was delivered to me, it was cracked. So that was sad. So I had this game sitting there, so I said, Greg, let's just use this game. And our original intention was just to change the back glass and change the artwork on the playfield and put it back together like it was. But as we got into it, I realized, well, wait a minute, I can move everything around on the playfield and we can make it really custom. So we have three Continental Cafe games, so we're making limited edition of three, all in a custom cabinet like you saw in the picture. And they won't be cheap, but they'll be top quality screened playfields and screened back glasses. It won't be a vinyl overlay on the playfield. They're actually going to be screened. And we will have it at the Chicago Expo in October, everything finished but the playfield. But he will have his playfield art standing beside the game.
What market are you aiming for?
wealthy pinball collectors. I don't know if there's too many of them.
Okay, well, I think what Main Street says, if you didn't come up with any questions while you're around, Dennis is going to be around in the bar tonight where he will be drinking Guinness. And other than that, there's certainly the early part of tomorrow. Dennis will be around. I think we're leaving sometime in the afternoon if we plan.
Yeah, I'll be around by Gary's booth, so if you have any questions or anything else you want me to autograph, I'll
so
be
Dennis,
happy
thank
to
you very much for making that long journey over the sea. It was particularly arduous. Not only was it his first journey, but actually cancelled his flight after he got to the airport, and it was, 24 hours or longer to get here on his first trip out of the country.
But it was well worth it. I've met so many nice people. It's been a wonderful experience.